On this week's show, we kick back with Jonah Wallerstein and talk about his ballsy fighting sports game, Kung Fu Kickball. Speaking about balls, Nintendo unleashes a Pokemon press conference that no one asked for, and it has no effect. Well, speak for yourself, Andy, because I happen to have enjoyed it. But Mario Maker 2 builds up its pre-release hype by laying out its multiplayer online features and collapses on itself faster than you could say, oh no! And finally, the Hype Zone reminds us of the evil that men do. This is Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 101. Hello, everybody. This is the new era, episode 101. Welcome to Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 101 for the week of June 3rd. Holy shit, it's June. That's a problem. Slow down, year. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, is my co-host, my partner in crime, and my best friend. He is Andy Asimakis, all the way from Queens, New York. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing great. I love your Mario impression.
Oh, no.
I wrote that just for you to hear that.
Woo!
It gives me such a joy.
Mario. Your balls tingle. And we also, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we also have Jonah. How are you, Jonah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm so happy that you're here with us. We chatted for about 5 minutes before the show, and you're bringing the energy. I love it. I love it.
Trying to here.
Bring it. So yeah. you're a fellow East Coaster, New Yorker, Northeast United States, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what you call this area. Where are you from? Are you from New York City?
I'm not from New York. From Chicago originally.
Okay,
but,
cool.
Live in Brooklyn now.
Me too. Brooklyn. High fives. Yeah. Boom.
Oh yeah.
Because we're close. We did the high fives. For those of you that are new to Nintendo Dual Screens podcast, this is a show where Andy and I and a guest host go over the Nintendo news that you absolutely need to know about, and we have an open discussion about Nintendo's past, present, and future, and focus on the nindies that deserve all your love and attention. Nintendo Dual Screens posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including iHeartRadio and Spotify. And by the way, reviews still not coming in. Guys, get off your ass, get on the iTunes, write some reviews. Let's go. It's not that hard. If you do it, I will read your review on the air. I will do it. I will say your name, and I will read your review. I don't even care.
In a funny voice, too.
I'll do voices. I'll do it all in Mario or Waluigi or Wario or whoever. I'll do anybody you want. If I could do it, I'll do it. Shit! Yeah, so do that. You can support us on Patreon if you want to give us your money, which you definitely should do. You can go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Alex Gonzalez. Alex, we cannot thank you enough for your constant support. You're a stalwart of the NDS podcast family, and we love you very much. We cannot continue to grow without it. Remember, every single dollar helps. If you want to be a part of the show, you can email us your questions, comments, and concerns at feedback@ndspodcast.com. Woo! All that shit's out of the way. Let's crack open one of these LaCroix before they go out of business.
Oh, no. Those are no longer a thing.
Oh, they're still a thing. They're just hemorrhaging money. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. This is a good one.
Like your anus after you drink them.
Right.
Endlessly.
Oh, stop it. It's water. It's all it is water. 100% naturally flavored water. Before we get into the lead story, and before we get into the Nintendo news report, which, by the way, Jonah, the lead story is all about you, and you want to tell us about your kick-ass game. Before we do all that, I want to go over a brand newly named segment and slightly tweaked segment for the new era of this show, the Nindies of the Week! That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is the Nindies of the Week. This is a segment where we each pick one Nindie or Indie game that you should know about. And Andy, let's start it with you.
Is that going to be a thing where you yell away from the microphone week after week. Because if it is, I want to quit the podcast now.
It's happening, buddy. It's happening. It's happening.
Oh, lordy. Well, my pick, my Nindies of the Week.
There you go. See, now you're getting in the spirit.
I got it. Yeah. Is Domo Arigato Roboto.
I love it.
Gato Roboto.
Oh, I wanted to play it so bad.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Oh, I'm so jealous
of you. It's Metroid and Blaster Master, but you're playing as a cat.
Oh, my God.
In a little mech suit.
That's the black and white one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You know,
it's so adorable.
When I saw that Playdate thing, that little pocket system that's going to come out next year, early next year for $150, you heard about that thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if we spoke about it on the show or post show. I don't know. I'm losing track. But this whole Gato Roboto, I'm like, oh, man, they should put it on there. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be a perfect game for that. But anyway, continue. Tell us what this game is.
Yeah, you play as a little cat named Kiki.
Kiki.
Crash lands on this, alien world, and Kiki's helpless. What can she do? A little innocent kitty cat. But she comes across a little robot mech suit and decides to venture off and bust some monster faces with it.
My cat doesn't even know what to do when it comes across its own food. I can't imagine. Like, Elliot, you're stupid. I love you. He's one of those cats that if you talk to him, he'll talk back. Let me see if I get him to talk. Elliot. Hello.
This is the quality content that we asked.
Oh, you could see him on the camera. I didn't know you could see him on the camera. There he is. Hi, Al.
And maybe he just needs a mech suit.
That's all you need. Stuff. Right. All you need is a mech suit and you're good to go.
Useless feline.
All right. So yeah, you recommended. How did you play a bunch of it? How far are you?
It's really short.
Oh, okay.
But it's super easy. But it's not that expensive. It's a really cheap game. And I feel like if you're waiting for the next kind of Castlevania or Metroid 2D title to come out, which maybe never, apparently, it's a good way to fill the time.
Well, you just got that collection, right?
Right. But there's one neat thing, though. You can unlock these things called cartridges in the game, which you can change the graphics. And there's a full-blown Game Boy graphics filter.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I do love the black and white default look of it, but that Game Boy look just takes you back. That green pea soup look.
I love it.
But yeah, it's super cute. It's a straight up Metroidvania game through and through. You get new weapons as you go along, missiles, busters, there's different mechs to acquire. Yeah.
Fancy.
Get it. Get on it.
Jonah, what do you got for us this week? You got anything? Playing anything lately?
A little bit. Let's see. Nothing. It came out some time ago, but I've been playing this game, Wonder Song.
Ooh, yes.
I guess I talked about that one already.
Yes, but it's so good.
It does a lot of really interesting things. You know, it like all the interactions in the game are done through this kind of singing mechanic where you just kind of, all the notes are kind of around your character and you kind of point in the direction to do the different notes. And that's how you make decisions in the game and like how you even kind of solve some puzzles and stuff. And it's also got just some fun characters, good writing. It's just a really heartwarming game.
Yeah, that definitely, I forget which guest it was. Was it,
it was West of Loathing, had the same exact recommendation. He mentioned that game.
Oh, yes, cool. That's who it was. Yeah. And that was, his name
whatever
was Jason,
that guy's
right?
name was.
Zach?
Sure.
Zach. Zach.
Zach, yes.
That's what it was. It was Zach, yeah. Zach and Jason, you can't get any whiter than that.
Yeah, you
would have. I had a 50-50 chance, I guess.
You really did.
All right, so I'm going to go with... this game I purchased a couple weeks ago when I went on my little shopping spree, but I only started it this week because I played through a bunch of other games first. But I really dig this game, and I like its aesthetic. It reminds me of like a PS2 era side scroller, and it's called Castle of Heart. It's pretty damn cheap that you could get it on the eShop, but you're essentially the cutscenes are like the opening cinematic is really well done, and that kind of drew me in instantly. Although it pissed me off that you can't skip it, but whatever, that's just me. I did enjoy it, but I know that if somebody's watching it again. And again, and again, and again, they may not like that. Anyway, but it's a simple side scroller, kind of solving like simple puzzles, like switches and stuff like that, and simple combat. It's got a little platforming, stuff like that. But I really dig these. It's almost like we're in this weird throwback to only like 15 years ago, kind of making that retro and bringing that back with this game. I don't know. Something about it seemed simple enough, but also intriguing, and it's dark and it's brooding. But you're playing like this knight that was, I guess, turned to stone, and now he has this like beating heart in him that's kind of like animating him, and you're kind of just going through this medieval countryside trying to figure out what the hell's going on. But I dig it. You know, I've been playing it. I played it for about an hour during my lunch break today, and I was like, hey, you know what? I could see this is going to be a good airplane game, I think, because I'm leaving tomorrow forever. Not really. I'll be back on Wednesday. But
what a tragedy.
But yeah, if you like side scroller action games with a little bit of puzzle elements, I think Castle of Heart is a good recommendation, especially because it is so cheap. I will check back next week when I see if I beat it, because I don't think it's very long. So we'll see. What else we got? What's next? Okay. That's what we've been playing, but what can we be playing starting next week? Let's see what Nintendo.com has in its coming soon section, because that is the be-all, tell-all of everything we need to know. Now remember, Nintendo doesn't put everything up on here, and so if things change, it's their fault. So we got Kododama, The Seven Mysteries of Fujisawa. Say that.
Game of the year.
Say
Game
that three year. Times, five times fast.
Game of the year.
Dare you. Andy, I fucking dare you to try and say that three times. What is this? This is one of those waifu games, I think.
Oh, that seems like one of my like weeaboo games.
Yeah, this is definitely up your ass, my buddy. Persona Q2.
Oh, no, that's
New Cinema Labyrinth. That's coming out, but that's a 3DS game, so break out the old 3DS, my friend.
I got to find it. It's under a shelf somewhere or as a doorstop. I'm not sure anymore. Someone's goddamn house.
Jonah, are you still using your 3DS? Do you still own one?
Did you never had one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Hold just, on. Let me... There we
go. He's just setting Nintendo Dual Screens podcast history by taking an active dump on the 3DS.
Probably not. You're just joining.
I would have had one. I had the old like Nintendo Game Boy Color, and then I just kind of skipped handheld devices for a while. Now I do have a Switch, so... I feel like I'm getting back into the Nintendo handhold,
the family area. You're back in the
That's
family.
That's right. There you go.
We got Tiny Derby. We have Perchang. What else we got? Red Siren Space Defense. Time Spinner.
Ooh, yes.
Time Spinner.
Recommend that one.
Yeah. That was on a Steam game, correct?
And PS4.
Yes.
Oh, no. That was only on PS4 and Vita.
Oh, yes. I remember this one.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I forgot this was coming. Oh, that's definitely next week's game for me.
Yeah, you got to get that, bro.
That's a good game. I like it. I want to give it a hug. Word Wheel by Paug. Paugle? Is that an exclamation Paugy? Point? Paugy? Pogy?
I think it's Pogy.
Slay the Spire. Now that's a game.
Oof.
Now that's a game. That's a video game.
That's going to happen.
That's a top tier video game right there. $24.99. They know what they got. Charging that kind of price. They know what they have in their hands. Summer sports games. Nope. It is also priced at $24.99, and also
just a big old nope.
And they don't know
one.
What they have.
Sorry, that developer.
Warlocks. I mean, you know what? I got to give it its due. Let me look at it.
At least click on the thing.
Oh no.
All right, move on.
Oh no. You know what this looks like? This looks like PlayStation Move Sports, whatever the hell that thing was called.
Oh Lord.
That's what that looks like. Warlocks 2, God Slayers. Refunked Battle Worlds Chronos, which I think I'm getting a code for, but I think I just went too far. Was that
You're going week? Ahead of time now. I think
that's
we're
the following
good.
Week. So yes. Hopefully I do get a review code for that, because I would like to check it out. It's a grid-based strategy game. Looks good. Anyway, that's it. So yeah, we got two picks for sure. I think Time Spinner, Slay the Spire are up there, and you with your Weeboo game. You can play that if you want.
That's only for science and for research purposes.
Research purposes, right. Right.
That's for my thesis that I'm working on.
Well, speaking of research, I tried to do a little research on Kung Fu Kickball this evening, but alas, I only have one controller, so that was a big waste of goddamn time. But I know Andy was able to play it. But Kung Fu Kickball, I've heard the pitch from Andy, but I want to hear the pitch from the creator himself. That's you, Jonah. That's you.
Sure.
Welcome to the show. And I want you, for our listeners who don't know what this is about, what this game is, can you tell us, give us that pitch. Give us that old elevator pitch.
Sure thing. I got it prepared. Kung Fu Kickball is a team-based fighting sports game where the best ball kicker wins. You got to punch, kick, and headbutt your way across the field to smash the ball into your opponent's bell and rack up points.
Ooh, so it's one of those games that you're going to want to punch your friends directly in the
mouth. That's right. Yeah.
Nice. So you were at, you're a local boy. You were at the spring Playcrafting NYC event here in New York City at the, I believe it was the Microsoft building, I think.
That's right.
Where that is where Andy saw the video game and, you know, kind of exchange information. So we're going to do two things with this segment, because I want to know about Kung Fu Kickball. Obviously, I want to know what your plans for it are. I want to know your inspirations for it and all that stuff. We're going to give you those questions. But I also want to segue into being an independent developer in New York City, which it's not necessarily one of the hotbeds of game development. It has a few, you know, studios. I know Rockstar has a building here, but it's mostly for their like admin and offices, but they do have like some programmers and whatnot here. But it's definitely, when you think of game development, it's almost always California, Canada, you know, Japan, whatever. It's like New York City, for whatever reason, has the cooties, the video game developer cooties. And I don't understand it. So be prepared, because I definitely want to ask you questions about that. But let's get back to Kung Fu Kickball. So where did this come from? Was this one of them? Did you develop this by yourself solo? Or was it something you came up with your friends? Give us the journey of Kung Fu Kickball.
Sure. So it is a solo endeavor. The journey kind of started as kind of me. I was playing Rocket League, and I was like, wow, I really love, you know, I'm not usually a fan of, you know, racing games, or even that much of a fan of sports games. But for some reason, I really enjoyed the feel of Rocket League. And I was like, what is it about this game that, like, is so engaging and so fun to, like, even to be bad at Rocket League, it's still fun to play, right? You're, like, whiffing the ball, but you're still, like, running around the court and stuff. And, you know, and but then there is that skill cap, and then it feels so good when you do get the ball in the air. So I'm like, okay, how do I take those mechanics and apply it to another multiplayer game I really like, which was the original Smash Brothers 64. I used to play that all the time in college.
Who didn't?
So it's like, yeah, right. So it's like, yeah, how can I combine these two games that I really like? And that's how I came up with Kung Fu Kickball. So it started as me just kind of like had this image of Captain Falcon, like back punching a ball in the air, and like making a goal like that. So it's kind of started drawing character around that idea, and like I just spent a lot of time first just making sure the jump felt good, and you know, I wanted some of that kind of you know, physics mastery that you get with Rocket League, but also with some of the fighting moves of Smash, but also keeping the simplicity of executing those moves.
Sure.
So just, yeah, those two games.
It's just so that we could visualize what you're describing. Can you talk about what the actual like playing field looks like? Are they different types of are they different levels? Is it like an arena with like one bell on one side, one bell on the other? Is there like dynamic changing? Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's six different arenas, and they're sort of like Smash Brothers levels, but there is a bell on each end, and the bell is the goal. So you got to kick the ball into your opponent's bell to score points. And the arenas are enclosed, so there's no chance of anything flying out of there, there's no way of dying. You can punch each other, but just like kind of does temporary stun damage, sort of, and kind of recover. So yeah, no one's ever like knocked out of playing. You can always keep playing, and it's just like timed match. After 3 minutes, whoever's got the most points wins. Then you got overtime too, but.
Cool. Andy, you went hands-on with this bad boy. Talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you're walking the Playcrafting event, most of the time folks are just kind of playing the game but not saying much or reacting in any way, shape, or form, and someone's explaining what the game is about to them. But then when I walked past the room where Jonah was in, I was like, oh, people laughing? Having fun? I just like how it's very rapid fire, the rounds. And it takes, like, it's very accessible. That's the best part, I feel, how it's very pick up and go. And it seems like it was tailor-made for that couch co-op setting, like having your friends around and having a beer and just enjoying this game with them.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, that and conventions. You know?
Right, of course.
So was your intent to... Your intent was obviously to invoke those old those college days, that the feeling of when you were in college, you know, playing with your roommates or whatever, your friends, on Smash Bros and all that stuff. So, what were the challenges of bringing something like that into today's day and age, where you know online is such a big thing, and you know these. You know, especially when you even look at Nintendo, like Nintendo only recently started to really support being able to play online. Like it was a couch thing. So like, what was that? How did you come to that decision? Essentially, like give me that. What's the word I'm looking for here, Andy? Help me out.
I have no idea.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what? There's a decision that you had to make, you know, and maybe you have aspirations of making this bigger than what it currently is. And we'll get to that as well. But how did you land on, you know, your couch co-op, and was it strictly because of nostalgia, or did you see a need for it? You know, stuff like that.
One of the biggest reasons was I've made a game in the past it was a mobile game called Too Many Snakes. It didn't do very well, but it was my first game, got it done. It's on the App Store. A little puzzle game, very different. But when I was going to different events and stuff and showing that off, it just wasn't that fun to show because, you know, when people are playing it at a convention, they're like head down in a mobile device. And even if they enjoy the game, they're not really showing that much excitement. And I saw a friend of mine, who's working on this game, Zarvot. People playing that game, is like a local multiplayer game, and they were getting excited. They were yelling at each other at the screen. And I was like, oh, I want a game that inspires that. And so that was also a big inspiration for why I chose like a local multiplayer focused game. However, I also realized from the beginning that if I wanted any chance of this actually selling, I needed online play. So it does have online play.
Cool.
And that, I don't know if I, in retrospect, whether that was the right or wrong move, because it ended up adding a huge amount of time to the development. You know, it was the kind of thing that I thought like, oh, everyone has online play now. It's got to be like a simple, well, not simple, but at least like relatively standard thing where you're like, oh, this is the kind of online play you want. Find the right asset on the Unity store and plug it in, right? But not really.
Can you explain that process a little bit? Because, you know, we do have, you know, people who want to get into game dev and, you know, like those are the interesting stories. So, yeah, can you get into that a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. I'll try to kind of explain the overview without getting like too nitty gritty about the technical details here. But basically, so there's a few different ways of doing, you know, online. And I was looking at, you know, fighting games, really, because, you know, this kind of operates similarly to a fighting game, you know, although there can be up to four players. You know, I wanted something similar that was very responsive.
Sure.
And so what most fighting games use is something called the lockstep, where it's direct peer-to-peer, and they're only sending the controller inputs to the other player. So they're not sending any game state info. They're just sending like, okay, player A press the A button, the other player press the B button, and then it doesn't advance the frame until it's gotten all the inputs from all the other players.
Interesting. Okay.
So I was like, okay, this is like the standard like fighting game style of doing. This is what like if people are fighting game fans, the technology GGPO is a lockstep engine. You know, I think like Street Fighter V uses that or something. I was like, okay, maybe I can use GGPO. So I researched that and like, oh, it doesn't really, you know, some people have gotten to work with Unity, but it's a huge ordeal, and we need to license that. And I found like some other thing that was like a pre-built asset, but then it turned out that the whole thing got the company stopped supporting it. And so I was like, okay, it looks like I got to write my own lockstep engine.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I started down that path. Then it was like, okay, but the tricky thing about lockstep is the game has to be completely deterministic. So that means that if, you know, if the game's in one state and all the inputs from the players are one thing, it should always lead to the same state after that. So it's always going to respond the same way to the same inputs. Okay. That way the two, you know, clients don't need to actually send the game state to each other. They're just sending the inputs and it should be in lockstep with each other.
Got it. Got it.
But that means you also have to account for a lot of things that computers do that aren't deterministic. And one of those things is some basic math things. So I had to like find an open source physics engine, like replace every float in there with something called a fixed point. And
oh boy,
it was a mess. But
why do you do this by yourself?
Yeah, I was going to ask that crazy question because we've had a lot of like 2-person teams come on the show, or like small groups of 4 or 5 rather. But you're one person doing an entire game. Which, with a semi-largest scope, it's not like an easy game to make. It's got online. It's a competitive game. It's got a lot of, you know, mechanics in it. What does your day-to-day look like when you're developing this game?
So luckily I'm not the only one working on the game. I am hiring an artist to do the background art, and I'm hiring a sound composer to do the sound for the games. But a lot of my day-to-day is, like, especially lately, has been dealing with, like, netcode issues. And, you know, I have rollbacks, so I need to work on that kind of stuff. So the first part of developing the game was mainly working on the mechanics. And then now the second part has been, like, really getting the net play to be as solid as I can. And then still going back and tweaking the mechanics a bit and things like that.
So these conventions, these public areas, is that where you primarily get the feedback that you're looking for these for your games?
Yeah, for sure. The conventions are great for that. You know, even the small ones like the Playcrafting Spring Expo. But like, I also took the game to PAX East this year, and that was a lot of fun. I got a lot of great feedback.
You know, I did see the game. I don't remember where I saw it, because Andy and I were essentially booked for all 4 days straight with like interviews and a point, whatever it was. And, but like every once in a while we were able to sneak in like a little extra thing if we got done a little early. And I remember seeing your game. I don't remember, were you in the mega, you weren't in the mega booth, right?
No, I wasn't in the mega booth.
Yeah. Whatever. I was just going to try and guess where you were, but that's really not, that's kind of pointless. So how long have you been developing this game? How long have you been showing it to people?
I've been developing it for about 2 years now. Yeah, a little over 2 years now.
So you've been going steadily to conventions. Has it been more of like a recent ramp up in appearances and stuff?
It's been a recent ramp up towards more serious conventions. The first like real serious convention I was actually MAGFest a couple of years ago. So.
Sure. Sure.
It took me about 6 months to get like something playable, and you know, I had the one level there, but I just like really polished that level and had one character and was able to get that done for MAGFest in 2017 or something. Mm. 2018, I forget now. So that was the big convention, and then I've been kind of going to a bunch of little ones, and then this year I've kind of been ramping up a little bit more. Went to PAX South and PAX East, you know, spending a little more for that.
So is this something that you always wanted to do, is making games like what you went to college for? Is it like, was it always your plan?
So it was the old, making games was always the inspiration for what I, you know, ended up doing. You know, when I was a kid, common indie story, played games, really wanted to make my own. So that got me into programming. And then I went to college. I was like, okay, you know, it's probably going to be kind of tough to make a living making games, so I'll just get a computer science degree. And so I, you know, went for a straight CS. I got a bachelor's, and then out of college, I was like, okay, I'll do a web job first, and then maybe make my way into games later. So I get my first web job out of college, and then 10 years later, I'm still doing web work. And I'm sure. I had applied to some game companies at some point, and either got rejected or just like felt like it wasn't that great of a company. So I sort of had the inspiration of like, well, you know, I'm getting paid pretty well at this web job, and they seem to like me a lot. So I wonder if they'd allow me to go half time. So I was like, hey guys, how about I go? You pay me half my salary, and I go half time and can work remotely. And they were okay with that.
Interesting.
So I've been doing that for the past 5 years, and it's been great. It's been ideal.
So let's talk about New York City, because as I mentioned earlier, it's not necessarily a hotbed, and really it doesn't make sense because there are so many people here, so many creative people. It's really an artistic hub for the world, and it always baffles my mind that when my game developer friends that I grew up with, the ones that want to make video games or program or whatever, they're always like, oh, hey, I applied for such and such. I would have to move to Maryland, or I would have to move to Toronto, or I would have to move to Vancouver. I'm like, or San Francisco, obviously, is like one of the big ones, or San Jose, whatever, San Diego. And it always baffles me that this city doesn't have more game development as one of the driving forces for game development. Like even game journalists, like I think Giant Bomb has an office here and Kotaku. I think that's really it. I think IGN has their tax division here. Like it's like all of their like marketing and tax people, like they're all here too. So
we got Killscreen around here too. So
what's that?
I think we got some people from Killscreen as well around here. Killscreen? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you hear of studios like, you know, smaller studios pop up, they go away, they whatever, they come back and forth. And usually you hear, oh, it's because of tax incentives. People go so you know, wherever for tax incentives. So I just want to ask you as a developer, you've been around the scene, I'm sure you've met plenty of developers. Why do you think it hasn't landed here in a more meaningful way?
I mean, I think the most obvious answer is just cost of living. A lot of game companies don't want to pay, you know, standard like engineering rates for game developers, and a lot of developers are willing to take less smaller rates to have the chance to work on games. So that doesn't work so well in a city like New York with really high cost of living.
But why does it work? Why do you think it works in Toronto? Toronto has a very comparable cost of living as far as like rent and housing. And also San Francisco is more expensive than New York. And San Francisco has dozens upon dozens of AAA studios in it. What do you think is the difference there? Is it just that, I don't know, like there's less, I've heard this from other people, there's less harsh weather. And so it's easier, it's people can work, you know, more happily or, you know, around the clock, because they put in ridiculous hours. I've heard that as being one of the reasons. Have you thought about leaving New York and going to these more populated game companies, or is it like, it doesn't matter where you are because you really don't have an intention of working for a bigger company, you just kind of want to do your own thing?
Well, first of all, yes, I really have no intention of ever working for a bigger company, and I really just want to do my own thing. And actually, that's one area that New York does shine. Like I lived in San Francisco for about 9 months before moving here, just to try it out as a city. And there were a lot of developers, but a lot of them were like doing, you know, it was more like marketing focused. There were a lot of mobile game companies and things there. And I did have a hard time meeting more like individual creators like myself. Well, here in New York, it's been amazing. I found a whole large group of friends who are all doing something similar to me. And we've even kind of gotten together and rented co-working space together in Dumbo, Brooklyn. We call ourselves Gumbo. And so we all like rent individual offices next to each other.
That's awesome.
And then support each other and stuff, which I wasn't able to find elsewhere.
So it's almost like you guys are made your own little studio, but you're making micro games out of this kind of collaborative studio.
That's right. And we're all making our own games, but we're also like helping each other out and like playtesting each other's games and things like that.
That'd be a really fun reality TV show, by the way.
That would be yes.
On a day-to-day basis.
Or even just a documentary, like, or a docuseries or something like that. Just like, it doesn't that necessarily.
Could be we could do it.
Who has time, Andy?
Go out to Dumbo and just do a documentary.
I'll tell you what.
You're always welcome.
If Gumbo wants to throw, you know, 3 or 4 months worth of salary for me and pay my rent, I'll do it. I'll take a leave of absence and I'll go there and I'll produce a documentary.
You just said cost of living is an issue. And you're asking for a salary.
Listen, I got kids to feed. I am messing
one day around. When Gumbo's big time, then we'll pay for you to come over.
Andy, I've been monopolizing the time. Why don't you ask
really
some questions?
Have, but it's totally fine because you've been asking some great questions. There's one thing I did want to ask Jonah, though. It's the first thing I asked you when I met you at the Playcrafting event, which is why I want to get you on this show to begin with. Besides having a great game and all that fun stuff. I had mentioned to you about you're targeting Steam for the game's release this year, correct?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Some things may have changed.
All right. Well, I'm not going to press you on release
dates. Epic. Epic has swept in. Epic has showed up and said, listen, punk, we'll give you 99% of your proceeds of your money. Oh, they got him.
So I'm not gonna press you on release dates or publishing deals. That's not what the show is about. We don't do gotcha journalism here. But I did mention to you, I asked if you were had any ambitions on getting the game on the Switch. And you were saying, well, yeah, you know, potentially it could happen in the future. Who knows? You know, why not? Mm-hmm. And I said to you that I could see it making a lot of money on the Switch because it's made for games like Kung Fu Kickball.
It's made for two. The Kung Fu Kickball is made for two Joy-Con.
Right.
For sure.
And then your response was, it's not a guarantee anymore. Like, getting your indie game on the Switch is not a guaranteed moneymaker.
Yep.
So I want to go into that aspect. Like, what do you think has changed with the Switch in terms of when it first came out, indie games were having huge success, but now it seems it's not a guarantee anymore.
I mean, I think it's just the basic visibility issue. You know, obviously, well-known indie games are going to do very well on the Switch.
Right.
Like, since Slay the Spire is coming out, I'm sure that's going to do
right, yes.
Gangbusters. Like, that's going to do fine. But smaller indie games are just being lost in the shuffle. You know, there's so many. You know, Switch used to be not to have that many games, so just by being there, you know, you would get noticed. But that is far from the case these days.
Do you think they can stand to curate the games a little bit better in the eShop on Nintendo?
Yeah, I think that could help. You know, I don't think Nintendo is doing a great job with kind of their eShop setup, and they tend to highlight just kind of the bigger games that are already big and not really, you know, pushing the smaller games or maybe, you know, well-reviewed games that aren't selling as well or something like that.
What they have been doing, I mean, we could give them credit here, is when they do those Nindie showcases, they do pack a lot of those lesser games in there, those smaller, you know, teams, those smaller games, and they give them at least a little bit of visibility where you can say, oh, what was that? And then, of course, they always put the name at the bottom, and then in their breakout, they have all the games that you know, were in it. So there's some ways of getting it out, but I imagine with over 1,000 games on the eShop at this point, I imagine getting in an indie showcase is a huge pain in the ass.
And even if you're on an indie showcase, I know some games who have been there, have been like part of Nintendo's big, you know, reel and stuff, and still have not really gotten noticed.
Interesting.
So
maybe less waifu sims and more better
games. I have a suggestion. Okay. And all I ask for is 5%. All right. I'm just joshing. Gumbo Games Collection. When all you guys finish your games, you bring them as a package to Nintendo. Say,
oh, like Super Sports Ball.
Super Sports Friends, yeah.
Friends, Friends, that's what it's called, yes.
Exactly. You go there yes. and you say, hey, these are five completely different games. We all built them together. We all helped each other. And it's a collection. That way you can, you know, you can charge your fucking $10, whatever, whatever it is. And it's a bunch of cool, fully fleshed out titles. And maybe, just maybe, Gumbo Games becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Just saying, copyright 2019.
No, I mean, we thought about doing a bundle at some point. I don't know. Does Switch allow like bundles or?
You could put it on as like a collection. Like I'm sure you could do like where, you know, one SKU is like five different games that are kind of loaded. I don't know if it has to be made in the same engine. I don't know how that works. I don't know if you guys are all using the same engine. I don't know what the rules are on that, but I can't see why not. You would know better than me.
Yeah. No, I mean, it might be possible. It'd be tricky.
He's like,
and some of us are already.
I want
on the
all
Switch,
the money
though.
For myself.
I want all that money.
Well, you know, on that note of like the New York City indie game scene, like, what have you seen coming out of it? Like in terms of games that are noticeable and you think have that potential to be like hits in or to be mainstream titles. You think like a Hollow Knight kind of game. Is it out there in New York City?
Have you, and I'm going to give you time to think, but one game that I played at a playcrafting event, I think it was last spring's event, was a game called Kingdom Bash.
Mm.
Have you seen Kingdom Bash? It's a really, it's a really cool game. And that's another dude that's making everything himself, but he won't allow himself to contract out any work. So he's doing all the work himself.
Absolute madman.
His name is escaping me. I have it on. I'm following him on Twitter. But that game, I think, if that game could just come out, just get it finished and come out. I know that he has a lot of big aspirations for it. I really think that could be a huge couch multiplayer, online whatever kind of game. So yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm sure you've seen games like that. And there was a couple that I saw at that event too that said they were coming to Switch, and I've never seen them come out. So. Things happen.
I mean, I think the other tricky thing about a couch or online multiplayer game is you need other people to play with, and especially for these smaller games, even if you get some initial interest in the game, then people jump online, and if there's not someone immediately there to play with, they'll kind of turn it off and be like, "Oh, this game's empty. There's no one's playing this game." So it can be really tough to kind of build up that critical mass.
What do you think smaller indie devs have to do to really crack that nut? Like you shouldn't have to make concessions on your creativity because a model of pricing or selling a product doesn't work anymore for the smaller guy. Like, is it something that you guys have to evolve to? Is it like, does free to play come to mind and, you know, more often than not? Like how has that been affecting you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a friend who has switched to making a free-to-play game. So that has, that is one way to just get people to try something out, is if you give it to them for free. But then you got to figure out ways to get them to eventually pay money.
Right.
But it also depends on what your goals are with the game. Like, I think there's very few indies who can really make a whole living off of their own games. Like a lot of them do contract work or have half-time jobs like I do. And so the games are more of a passion project, which I'm like, they want to make money with the games, but it's not, in some ways it's just not realistic to hope to make a living off of indie games, especially not in New York. No matter what you do, but there are ways to make at least something with them, I think. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Well, we certainly wish you luck.
Thank you.
And we are here anytime you want to chat, and when the game does come out, we would love to maybe do some streaming with you and all that fun stuff.
Awesome.
But that's Jonah and Kung Fu Kickball. Do you have do you have a studio name, or is it just?
Yep, I am Whale Food Games.
Ooh, Whale Food Games. I like it. So yeah, we'll have all the social stuff, and we'll go over that at the end where you can tell people where to find you. But we have some news to get into, and the show's already running long, so let's touch up on the smaller stuff first, Andy. It is time to get into the Nintendo News Report, and I'm going to jump right in with number one before we get into the bigger stuff. I saw this today. I thought some of you out there might like it. Harvest Moon Mad Dash was announced for Switch. It is going to be at the E3 2019 lineup. I thought that was cool because Harvest Moon, I know this isn't a, you know, mainline Harvest Moon game.
It sounds like a racing game, to be honest. Is it?
Let's see.
It's not, I'll only
there's fishing. I'm sorry, that was the other one. Hold on. We're excited to announce a new Harvest Moon game and reveal the first look of its gameplay and features at E3 2019. Fans might be surprised at what we have in store for Harvest Moon this year. The different take on Harvest Moon experience that will let players enjoy the classic features of the series in a new and exciting way. They're calling it a spinoff. So who knows? Maybe it's like a Harvest Moon, but it's against time. Like it's a timed, it's more like bite sized.
It's a multiplayer who can pick the most crops the fastest.
There you go. Farmville 2.0.
Who can milk the most cows?
I'm skipping the next one, Andy. I'm going to go down to number three, which
you got to do, buddy.
Because the second one is going to be the biggest one. This one was really pissed off a lot of people. Super Mario Maker 2 announced or kind of went over its online features, and apparently, if you want to play online multiplayer in Super Mario Maker 2, which thank you for adding multiplayer up to 4 players, that's great, right, guys? We could agree on that. 4-player multiplayer for making courses, playing it with your friend. Oh wait, you can't. You can't play with your fucking friends in Mario Maker 2.
Listen, Steven. All right. Each and every week, we have a stranger come on this podcast, and it works out every single time. Who needs friends? Who needs them?
It's just Nintendo gonna Nintendo, right? Like, they're gonna get your hopes up and then just do, like, that one weird fucking thing that just ruins something for somebody, and it just makes no sense. Like, why? Because there's supposedly it's because they do like these ranked courses or whatever. Like, just make them unranked. It makes no sense.
Joanna, can you pledge here on the podcast that your game will allow for lobby invites for your friend list?
I pledge it will allow lobby invites.
There you go.
I'm actually working on that feature right now.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. All right, Kung Fu Kickball lobbies. Get right with it, Nintendo. But
Steven,
hopefully
you can
crossplay lobbies.
Yeah, you can play locally with your friends, Steven, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, that's great.
So there's that option.
So my 4-year-old will play with me.
Another odd thing, this game is online subscription mandatory.
It probably
is. Most of the fun features.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like uploading levels or playing online levels. Yep.
Thanks, Nintendo. Moving on down is another bit of news here.
This is bizarre to me.
VR gonna get real dizzy because Smash Bros. Ultimate Version 3.1.0 is adding VR mode.
Why?
With Toy-Con VR goggles, as well as new amiibo features. VR, this is from Nintendo Everything, who did the little wrap-up here. Here's the brief blurb uncovered from an in-game notice that will be appearing when the update goes live. VR mode is now available. A whole new perspective on Smash action awaits. You can play VR mode using the Toy-Con goggles, sold separately. Why? Is it going to be like looking in a diorama, you think?
I don't want it.
Like, you're just really fucking close to these toys?
I don't see why this is happening. I feel they're trying to latch on VR functionality to anything that's popular in their library. First it was Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, now it's Smash Brothers.
VR not going to buy this thing! Moving on.
Did you say VR not?
VR not. See? Get it?
Got it. Love it.
I'm so good at that. And I also said VR. That's why I said VR gonna get dizzy.
You're the worst.
And the final bit of news was the Pokemon Press Conference 2019. Now, if you remember,
speaking about things that made me dizzy.
Holy shit, do they have stuff.
What was this?
All right, so we also got getting this this wrap up from Nintendo Everything, but this is from the official release from Nintendo. So, here's a couple things we're getting here. Pokemon Home, Okay. This is a program that essentially links Pokemon, all the Pokemon properties together, kind of like a Pokebank, but it takes Pokebank, Pokemon on the Switch, Pokemon Go, and links them all together so you could swap Pokemon between them. That's essentially what that is. Here we go, Andy. Andy wanted to make this the hype zone, but first of all, any thoughts on Pokemon Home? No, it's just a cool feature.
Well, you know what? It sounds to me like Nintendo ripped off PlayStation.
I know, right?
Sony. PlayStation Home, anyone? Thank you very much.
Is it going to close in 3 years as well?
It might as well.
Hopefully not. But you know what you will be closing? Your eyes.
Your eyes. You're such an asshole.
For Pokemon Sleep. And I need to read this whole thing. Soon,
it's so long.
It's not that long. Soon, trainers will be able to wake up with the Pokemon every morning with Pokemon Sleep, a mobile app from the Pokemon Company.
That sounds dirty.
Pokemon Sleep aims to turn sleeping into entertainment by having a player's time spent sleeping and the time they wake up affect the gameplay. While more details about the app's functionality will be revealed at a later date, it was announced that a new device from Nintendo, Pokemon Go Plus, will connect to Pokemon Sleep and launch Steven, with the app. Yes.
It's the Pokemon Go Plus Plus.
It is the Plus Plus, isn't it? There's a little extra plus sign. Oh my God.
How could this not have been the hype zone? Tell me.
Because there's something better in the hype zone, that's why. Okay, the new device also has the same functions as the original Pokemon Go Plus. Oh shit, it is Plus Plus.
Hello, what did I just say?
I thought that was a typo or just it's redundancy. Plus. Oh no.
This is happening. This is real. This is your life now.
Well, you could look forward to this.
You can wake up in with 2020. Your Pokemon into this living nightmare scenario.
Holy shit. Trainers around the world will have a chance to encounter Snorlax that are lying down in deep sleep in Pokemon Go beginning today, which I did. I caught like 6 of them. Hopefully we can get a shiny. You about that shiny life? That shiny Snorlax life, Andy?
None are out there. It's not a thing yet.
Damn. Jonah? You about that Snorlax life? You're a big Pokemon dude?
Do you like sleep?
I do like sleep.
Do you like food and sleeping?
Occasionally. Some days.
See, my idea for this was that it should track your sleeping habits if you thrash around a lot, like tossing and turning. Like it's an actual Pokemon battle.
Nice.
And you gain experience points.
Nice.
That's what should be happening.
They should make Pokemon Sleep VR Labo Edition.
Right.
Where you sleep with the thing strapped to your face and it just your REM makes the game do stuff.
And you get double XP for night terrors.
or your weird demonic sleep apnea that you have.
Hey, that's like a last boss scenario.
God damn it, it's terrifying. Story for
listeners.
We'll tell that story on the post show. We got shit to get through here.
Give me the post show.
The next thing was Pokemon Masters. It's a new Pokemon mobile game. It's on the way for iOS and Android devices from the Pokemon Company and Dena, DENA. Pokemon Masters enables players to experience a new type of Pokemon battling on the go and features many famous Pokemon trainers from the long history of Pokemon video games. Gameplay will be optimized for smart devices for a casual but uniquely Pokemon experience. Fans can expect more details about Pokemon Masters in June.
Heavy microtransactions. That's all I'm getting from that little blurb.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give us all of your money.
Here's a big one. Detective Pikachu is coming to the Switch. A new Detective Pikachu game. A direct sequel to Detective Pikachu. The release of the Pokemon Detective Pikachu movie has left fans wanting more of the famous Pokemon sleuth. I'm not sure about that. The Pokemon Company announced today that the Creatures Inc. has plans to create a new entry into the Detective Pikachu video game series, this time for the Nintendo Switch. The original Detective Pikachu game was for the 3DS and ended on a cliffhanger. So we're gonna
recast Kaiji Tang in this game.
Yes. Absolutely.
Fuck Ryan Reynolds.
Do not fuck my boy KG, all right?
KG is the man. Get him on the game.
And Pokemon Quest is going to China. That was another bit of news. And of course, they have they announced that they have Pokemon shirts.
Pokemon shirts.
Yep, those are happening. And that's it. That's the news.
That was a lot of hype zone material.
There was a lot of hype zone material in there, but
and yet somehow none of it made it.
None of it made it. And why is that, Andy?
Because the real hype zone is even more hype than that.
Hold on. Hold on. Jonah, I don't think you understand how hype the hype zone is. And I'm going to need some more fucking energy from you because the hype zone is about to get goddamn real. Okay?
Shit.
The hype zone is about to punch you right in the nuts and possibly stay there for a couple of extra seconds for dramatic effect. Andy, take it away.
Guys, this is the real shit right here. Okay. Iron Maiden. The legacy heavy metal rock band of our youth. Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah.
The almighty. The rock god.
Hell yeah.
Has filed a $2 million trademark lawsuit against 3D Realms and their game, Iron Maiden. Come on. Aww. What is this?
Wow. This is going to be the trial of the century. This is huge.
Come on.
Huge news. Iron Maiden is suing because of a letter. Because of one letter. I want to know, does Iron Maiden's lawyer not understand parody?
How words work?
How parody law works.
Well, I think it's time we for full transparency, there's a game that Steve and I were working on. It's a cooking sim called Judas Yeast.
Yep.
But now that's out the door.
That way out the door. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We gotta get rid of that altogether.
Yeah, we have to get rid of that one. That's not going to work. We do have other ideas, but we're going
to
keep those close to the vest and see how this Iron Maiden thing pans out first.
I don't want to go into the full report here, but they're saying how it is indisputable they did not know about the band name before making their own video game name.
Yes.
Like, who the fuck's Iron Maiden?
That's a pun, is what it is.
They're referencing numerous instances of actual confusion of Iron Maiden fans. So I guess they're that dumb.
Well.
That they believe that Iron Maiden is related to Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden is making a game or something? Because, like, why else would they care about the game stuff?
Other question. Is Iron Maiden not aware that an Iron Maiden is a torture device? Like a real thing? Steven, it's an actual thing?
Steven, these details are not relevant when it's all about this $2 million lawsuit.
Heard.
They're Iron Maiden trademark, okay? That's where it counts.
Whatever. That's going to do it for the hype zone. Thank you for coming on that journey with us, Jonah. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Appreciate it. Now it's time for everybody's favorite segment. This is where we're going to put our thinking caps on.
Better be a game.
You and Andy are going to put your big old noggins together, and you're going to try and guess the retro game of the week. Last week's game was Metal Storm, which Andy decided to really fuck me with. Which I've never played this video game and still haven't. I did download it, the ROM.
The one with the mech that switches gravity and stuff?
Yes.
See, now, if he was on your team last week, he would have gotten it.
Yep.
Well, I went to remember the name, but when I heard the name, I was like, oh, yeah.
So I remembered the box art. I didn't remember because it was one of the games in my local video store, which no longer exists, but it used to have, like, Nintendo and Super Nintendo games. It was one of the games that somebody took the chip out of the cartridge.
Whoa.
So when I rented it, I was so excited and I put it in and it was just giving me that blue screen that Nintendo gives. And I'm like, what's going on? Why isn't this working? I'm blowing on it. And I never thought to look. It wasn't until later. I'm like, where's the chip? It's gone.
Did it feel light to you when you picked it up?
Yeah, but what? I mean, I'm what? 8, 9 years old. Who cares?
8-year-old hands.
Yeah. I don't really know. All right. So this is how it works. I am going to give you guys, you're working as a team, I'm going to give you guys 10 clues, one by one. After each clue, you can either guess or you can ask for the next clue. Now, the reason why you would want to ask for the next clue is because you only get 3 total guesses. 3. If you'd like to ask a yes or no question, you could do so, but you forfeit one of your guesses, and then you move on to the next clue. Andy is going to get points based on how quickly you are able to get to guess the game. So if you get it in the first clue, it's 10 points. Second clue, it is 9 points, and so on and so forth. If you use all 3 guesses, you're out. You get 0 points. If you get all the way down to the last clue and whatever, 0 points. All right. Are you ready to play? Do you understand the rules? Oh, retro. When we say retro game club, we mean from the GameCube and back. And it is a game that has appeared on a Nintendo console or handheld. Andreas, are you ready?
We got this, Jonah.
Oh, yeah.
We got it.
No problem.
Okay. Are you ready?
Paperboy.
Careful.
Now watch it actually be Paperboy.
I want to look at this cover art real quick. Hold on. Damn it. It's not working. Sorry. I wanted to see if... I just want to see if the Wikipedia art, the art design on the Wikipedia page had it just gets blurry. Anyway, this game was made by LJN.
Ooh, okay. Wait, made or published?
Published by LJN.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's.
When LJN has their stamp on something, it's usually not good.
All right, so
John, a lot of things. I mean, they weren't around for a super long time, but you know, Wolverine, Nightmare on Elm Street, Jaws, Back to the Future,
a lot of licensed stuff,
and they also did do Spider-Man and Venom, I think, for Super Nintendo.
Oh,
yeah.
They also did all the wrestling games for Super Nintendo.
Right.
Ah.
All righty. So, okay.
We're on the right track.
All right. Would you like the next clue?
Yeah, sure.
For 9 points, there are two playable characters named Cool.
Is it going to be something like Cool Spot or something?
Is it Cool Spot?
I don't know. Does that be our guess?
There are two of the playable characters. I will say it that way. I will phrase it that way because I don't want it to seem like there are only two characters. Two of the playable characters have Cool.
Cool. Oh, they have the name Cool in
cool
their name?
As part of their name.
The word. Oh.
Okay.
You like, you know, J.B. McCool or some shit like
right,
that.
Right.
I think that could be one of the wrestling games then because, like, I'm sure those wrestling games have.
Yeah, which, again, I'm not. Not a forte, am I, if it's a wrestling game.
Yeah,
well, you did fuck me last week, Andy.
Right, but Metal Storm was an actual good game. And I...
The jury's still out on that.
Okay, so we know, okay, we got multiple characters here.
Two with the Cool in it, okay. All right. You know what? I think I want to ask Harrison a question.
Okay.
Just so it's out the door.
Okay.
Is this a wrestling game or a WWF game?
It is not.
Okay, that's good to know. I'd rather that not be the case. Yeah, so
two guesses remain, and we're going on to the next clue for 8 points.
Cool. I'm into it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is considered a sports game.
Mm.
That means it's not a conventional sport.
What about, did Mutant League have character names or anything?
Mutant League, yeah, but I don't think that was an LJN game, though.
Mm, yeah, probably not.
It's considered a sports game.
It's a sports game.
It's clearly hockey, clearly football, so it's not like there's no debate on if it's a sports game or not.
Well, but it's just, then, okay. I don't want to give too much away. The reason why I say that is because the system that this is on was very liberal with what they called sports.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'll amend the question. This is not your traditional sports game.
Okay, so I think that throws out like standard hockey and basketball or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely not like one of those games. All right, I think we got to go on to the next clue.
7 points. 10, 9, 8, 7. Yep, that's what we're up to. This game was released on the Nintendo Entertainment System in 1988. put yourself in the right mindset.
I just can't think of that many sports-ish original Nintendo games.
Yeah, and like, again, there's the whole thing is about it. It's not a traditional sports game. Is it like, were they playing like, you know, polo? Yeah, I mean, like I said, my LJN games are just going to be reduced to licensed games. Yeah. I don't know. If it's not wrestling, it's hard for me now. Because they, I think that there was like a baseball game they had, but again, it's, baseball is a very traditional sport, so it can't be it. All right. Next.
6 points. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Fifth clue. This game had, was two player alternating. It was a pass the controller type two player alternator, alternating video game. You take turns, baby.
Oh, I'm wondering if, like, did LJN publish California Games? But that's like, they had a lot. They were like traditional sports games in that, though. I'm not ringing the bells. This is going to be like that obscure game that one time. Like some weird title, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm clueless.
Yeah. I don't know.
For 5 points. Next clue? Yes, you're asking for that.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Okay.
This game's, one of this game's playable characters is it is a very exciting gorilla.
I have no idea.
Exciting gorilla.
Joe and I feel like whatever clues you get at this point, I am lost completely.
I think we're screwed.
There's a gorilla involved now.
And the only like gorilla sports games are like Diddy Kong's Racing from N64.
Right, yeah, that's not going to be this.
No.
No, that was a racing game too, but I don't think it was an LJN game.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you a question, Steven, but this is not going to be a yes or no question. This is more for my own personal sanity. Was this game this idea of your own design, or was it a submission from one of our listeners?
No, this is mine. Okay. I actually looked at my game collection and picked it from my game collection.
Oh, you own this game?
Yes,
I do. Oh, wow.
It's a bonus clue.
I don't know why you would own a game with...
I might own two copies of this game, actually. I'm pretty confident I actually might have owned two copies.
So you've owned two of this and also two of... What was it called again?
Kickle Cubicle. Kickle
Cubicle?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And both Zelda games.
Two of each?
Yeah. The gold game, the gold cartridge. I gotta replace those batteries. It reminds me.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Next clue. I think I have to forfeit soon because I don't know what the fuck this is.
Now let's hear all the clues here.
Yeah, let's hear all the clues. Why not? Why
oh, God. I don't remember the clues. Damn it. All right. Shit. Okay. It was published by LJN. It has two characters named Cool. It was released on the NES in 1988. It has two players alternating, you know, like pass the controller type stuff, or like, you know, take turns going. And it stars, one of the playable characters is an exciting gorilla, and it is not your typical sports game. So for 4 points, your next clue, clue number 7 for 4 points. Let's pick something that's going to push you in the right direction. All right, so I've mentioned three of the four characters. Okay. So there's four characters total. And the fourth character wears a tiki mask.
This is of no help to me at all.
Yeah, same. Just go to the next clue after that.
Next Steven, clue? Your clues are getting better, but I have no idea what this game is, what the gameplay is like, what's going on in it.
The game, if I do gameplay, it's like it could be one of two games. So it's like I'm trying to dance around that part. That's where I'm. All right. This game. Okay, this is for 3 points. Hold on. I can't read the. Damn it, I'm trying to read the stamp that's on the box, and I can't make out the words. Well, it was developed by Atlus. That's one thing that I'll give you. That's like a half clue.
Right, but Atlus did do a lot of their games.
Right, that's why it's not that great of a clue. So I'm gonna just give you that one. That's a gimme. Okay.
Oh, yay! We got some gimmies.
Okay.
Does it have modes? Like, what is this game? I don't know what this is.
This game has
that it's a maybe a sport. That's all I'm getting from this game. It's a maybe a sport.
This game has three. This game has three modes. This game has three modes. One takes place in the street. One takes place in the ocean. And the other one takes place on the wood and water.
Wood and water? What the fuck?
Oh, could it be like Windjammers or something? No, that wasn't that early.
I have no idea what this could be. Is it skateboarding or surfing or sailing?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a boardwalk involved? I don't know what this is.
All right, next clue.
This game does in fact have skateboarding and surfing.
Oh, great.
I got it.
Tiki and Cool's Radical Fun Time Surf Skateboard Adventure.
Wow, you were so close. So close. I think this is your last clue if you get one more clue. I lost track if I'm completely honest with you.
Well, I want to officially lock that in as a guess. Is that am I right?
No, that is incorrect. Okay. Your final clue. Your final clue. Hold on. Town and country surf designs. So of all of my clues, I've given you the entire name of this game. You give up. It's Town and Country Surf Designs Wood and Water Rage, also known as TNC Surf Designs video game. And it was a terrible video game. And I'm going to send you a link.
I would never have. I gave you a good game last week.
How did you go from
Mario Kart 64 to this abomination of a game? What?
This game
Town and Country Surf Designs? Surf Designs?
This was a big, big part of my childhood, okay?
Was it now?
Yes.
It explains a lot.
Look at that tiki guy skateboarding and ollieing over stuff.
I gotta look this shit up.
Yeah.
What is it called again?
I dropped a link in the chat. I'm sure you've seen this game because it was pretty popular because it was like when skateboarding was like a thing, like a new thing. California Games did this better.
And that was bad. No one likes California Games. Oh, this is what's up with the weird yin and yang sign?
I don't know. That's like, I guess that's the Town and Country Surf Design logo.
Oh my god, this is atrocious.
But yeah, so the characters are Joe Cool, Tiki Man, Cool Cat with K's, and Thrilla Gorilla.
Oh no.
The Wikipedia page like five sentences. So I had to really do a lot of work to get those clues.
I think you have the record for the longest names ever in a video game in the retro.
Town and Country Surf Designs Wood and Water Rage.
I don't know, the longest, probably one of the worst.
You know, Jonah, before we end this episode and I go to Brooklyn and stab you with a knife. there was a huge debate over the Retro Game Club. We tried to restore some dignity to this segment. It has now gone down the toilet with this game.
TNC.
At least
Surf
you
Design,
knew Metal
baby.
Storm. You knew what it was.
I knew Metal Storm.
Yeah. Gravity game? Yeah, I've heard of it. Sure. Quality game.
Well, yeah. And cool mechanics.
And you gave me this.
Here's the thing. This game's hard.
I can pull some bullshit on you next week.
I'd much rather you didn't. I'd much rather
but
you didn't.
I'm not going to be that guy.
Thank you. I just wanted to pick a game that I played a lot of as a kid. I liked this game as a kid. It was hard as hell, especially the surfing. The surfing was damn near impossible.
Tiki Man looks like Strong Bad.
He does. He does look like Strong Bad. Yeah. And the cool cat looks like he's like a weird cat wearing a tuxedo. It's weird. It's a weird game. But what you should know is that they do make t-shirts.
I'm not buying you a t-shirt.
TNC Surf Designs, I think, was a surf and skating company, like clothing company back in the day.
Cool spot.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us. So before we get out of here, let's wrap this thing. Let's do a little housekeeping here.
Yes.
Remember, Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast is part of the Proven Gamer Podcast Network, which includes Trophy Horse, a PlayStation podcast, and Game Stuff, a general games discussion podcast. They are really putting out some good stuff. I listened to their show today. Good job, guys. I'm really enjoying it. Keep up the good work. If you remember, a Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast posts each and every Monday on your podcast service of choice. But if you do happen to have iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever the hell they're calling it, please leave us a review. It helps us get more recognition in the search bar. As you can imagine, when you put Nintendo in the search bar, you're going to get a lot of shit. So please review us so that we get in front of more eyes. If you want to follow us on social media, you could do so. I am at, the show is at NDS Podcast. I am at Batchild27. Andy is at Pants Guy. And now, Jonah, tell us where we could find all of your thing.
Well, most of my thing you can find on kungfukickball.com. You can wishlist it on Steam. On Twitter, I am at WhaleFoodGames. And also have a Discord if you want to come and poke me and tell me, demand when the game is released and things like that.
Would you like to join our super secret VIP Discord?
Oh, sure.
Because we invite all of our developer friends into our
Sounds
Discord.
Good.
And it's for our patrons. So our Patreon supporters get to go in there, and everybody's really respectful, and we have really great discussions, and you're more than welcome to join us, so I will send you a link. That's right, folks. For as little as $1, you could join our Patreon. That's patreon.com/NDSpodcast. Do it. We got all sorts of tiers. We got the $1, gets you into the VIP Discord, and it also gets you a bonus episode every month, which you vote on the topic. Then you could do the $5, which you get the pre and post show every single week when Andy and I record the pre and post show. You get it. The $10, you're going to get, what do you get with the $10? You get the Google Hangouts audio when we do our super special Google Hangout. What's that, you say? Oh, that's just the $25 level. So our $25 supporters and up, they come and do a show with us every month about whatever they want to talk about. We do it, we record it, and then we put it on Patreon for the $10 and up people. It's really a win-win. And then for $50, if you're Alex Gonzalez and you want to support, and formerly Colton Nessler, if you want to support us as a Patreon producer, you could do so at the $50 tier. And yeah, so you get a shout out on every episode and you're becoming, and we do take the whole Patreon producer thing pretty seriously. So if you want to have if you want to have our ear and really help us make this product better, make these shows better, being a producer will definitely get you there. We like to have like little one-on-ones with our producers and stuff like that. So you could definitely do that. What else am I going to do? Oh yeah, Facebook. You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/NDS podcast. Lots of fun stuff happening there. Lots of memes being thrown around by the ankles. And so yeah, that's that. So Jonah, thank you so very much for joining us. You're an excellent, excellent person to talk to on this podcast program. I appreciate
you having me. A lot of fun.
And we're in the same borough, so
that's right.
You know, we could definitely get together. Maybe we could stream one night or something like that. We could hang out. I could get Andy to come out. We could all do a thing.
Actually, another cool thing I'm going to throw out there. There's a bar now in Bushwick called Wonderville that has arcade cabinets, and my game is one of the cabinets there. So,
oh wow,
it's on. It is on.
Oh yeah. So I mean, is there anything else you want to plug? I mean, there was that. Is there anything else you could think of? What about your mobile game? Do you want people to go buy that? Give you some money?
No. I mean, it's a decent game, but it's very different. And
All right, so go to Steam, wishlist the game, go do the thing. All right, before we go, Andy, is there anything you'd like to tell the kids?
Yeah, like next week's guest.
Woo!
It's already locked in place.
Locked and loaded.
We're having Stardock on to talk about their upcoming game, The Video Game Machine. What's that, you ask?
Ooh.
Oh, it's a sandbox game where you can create, play, and share your own video games online with people. So,
can you want to make friends?
Yeah, if you want to make your very own tiki and cool, super radical surf type adventure, you can make it.
No, that's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's like an actual engine. It's like Dreams, but
like
for
RPG
games.
Maker.
Yeah,
but for indies.
Exactly.
Who knows? Maybe Gumbo Games could get in on that. Start making games on there. You know what I mean?
You can choose a genre.
You never know.
Set the rules and make your own adventure.
That's it, folks. That's going to do it for us here at Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 101 for the week of June 3rd, 2019. Halfway through. E3's coming, Andy.
Oh, it's coming strong.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be tight.
We have to do our predictions very soon.
Or unpredictions.
Our unpredictions. That's correct. Yeah. Jonah, we do unpredictions on the show. You should listen to our show. It's really funny. I promise. Rate us on iTunes, please.
Well, he was just on it. Rate us on iTunes.
If you want to listen to the pre and post show, remember you could do so by supporting us on patreon.com/NDSpodcast for $5. Anyway, that's it. As always, thank you, Jonah. Thank you, Andy. And please be excellent to each other.
It's not the worst thing to get wrong. I've had teachers that called me Stein for years.
No, I won't get it wrong because Henry Rolfenstein in My Cousin Vinny, when the bailiff or whatever it was says Stein, he whispers, he said Stein, it's Steen. And then he gets sushed. So I'll never forget about that. All right, so I'm ready to go. Are you guys ready to go? You ready to do this thing?
Sure.
Let me take the intro. Any words missing? Am I a dummy? Hold on.
Oh, you know you're a dummy. No. There's no doubt you're a dummy.
That's true. I mean, that's, yeah, without a doubt, but...
And I have it on tape because I'm already recording. So
my idiocy.
Nope, I have it on I have it recorded, so I'm going to clip that out, and it's going to be at the end of every single episode we do from now on.
Love it.
I'm a dummy. Like, all right, ready to do this? Let's do this.